The Variety Artist, episode 32, Performer Horror Stories 2018. We're changing it up a bit on this podcast. I've collected some of my very favorite performer horror stories from the past 30 or so interviews. If you've been performing for any amount of time, I'm sure you have your own. I'd love to hear them. I think everybody else would too. So go to thevarietyartist.com and post them in the comments section of this podcast. That way everyone can share in your misery. Let's do it. Performer Horror Stories 2018.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
This first performer horror story is from episode 23, Mike McLaughlin, who really bleeds for his art.
I used to have a routine that I did that I wrote this slapstick routine called Late for the Recital, about a guy who's late to play his violin at a recital. And it was this really fun slapstick thing with a violin case and music stand, and had a lot of fun with it. It's really the act that got me to the Kennedy Center, got me to a number of places. People were like, that's great. Mm-hmm. But it was really good. And it was a great way to close a show. And I got hired to do this campground, and they were like, they had this little indoor pavilion, but they were like, you know what? It's so beautiful out today. Why don't we want to do it down. We want to bring chairs down and have everybody sit down by the water. Can you do this show on the beach? And I was like, oh God, no. And they were like, you know what we'll do? We'll get a piece of plywood. We'll get a 4x8 sheet of plywood, put it on the ground. You can do your show on that, right? And I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Sure. So run through the whole show and I survive. I do everything okay. And I get to the end and I'm going to do Late. So I hit the music. And I'm sweating. Like, it is, when she says on the beach, she is talking about it is a 90 plus degree day on the beach. So I am sweating like I have never, like it's getting into my, you know, it's just, you know, the salt is getting into your eyes. It was miserable, but I'm just sweating like a dog. So I'm going to close with Late. I go to do it and I use a metal folding chair, and there's a point, you know, and the great part about slapstick, right, is they don't know if you really hurt unless you do it the way I did it that day. There's this point where I'm supposed to grab the stand and it's stuck. And then I pull up on it. And the move is I put my thumb over the end and I do a forehead bang. But just as I did that, the corner of my chair slid off that 4x8 sheet of plywood right into the sand. And I launched backwards. Didn't get my thumb on, but still drove this pipe straight into my forehead.
And ow!
Did not know that I had cut a moon-shaped slash in my forehead. So what I think is just a lot of sweat is an ungodly amount of blood dripping down my face. So when I got done, it was just like always just an enormous wave of applause, sometimes standing O's if I could get them. Not this time. People were, I mean, the clapping was like this slow, concerned. I mean, it was the weirdest thing. I was like, whoa, I just bombed, but I don't know how. And I had the promoter came up and they was like, you are bleeding like you can't believe. And I looked down and my shirt, gosh, you know, cause I'm moving 100 miles an hour or 17. I don't have time to notice. And I was just bloodied. But that was the one where it was just like, yeah, didn't matter how good I'd done the rest of the show, that people were just like, that is the worst thing I've ever seen.
Up next from episode 17, it's funny Eddie Medrano telling the story of a couple of clowns and a piñata.
I knocked a quadriplegic out of his chair.
Okay, wait. You have to say that again. You have to say that again.
I knocked a, well,
I'm not because laughing of
me,
at that.
Because
I'm...
of me, a quadriplegic person was knocked out of his chair during a Ringling Brothers skit.
What happened?
The show.
So I love that you're trying not to laugh, John.
So we have this piñata gig. We have a piñata gig. We have four clowns dressed in your traditional Mexican clown garb, and we have another clown dressed as a piñata. So he's wearing the rainbow-colored frilly stuff, and he has big horns on his heads, and he's wearing a harness so we can string him up. I'm sorry, so we can hook him up to the center ring where we are, so he can fly up, and we have these sticks covered in foam to hit him. And so when the kids hit him, he has another piece of fabric that on his stomach, so he rips it off, and all the candy falls on top of the track rubber where all the elephants and everybody else.
That's gross.
But the candy's wrapped. It's okay, most of it. But unfortunately, you know, sometimes people are late for their cues, and instead of four people pulling on the piñata, there were only two. So he only went about halfway up. So he's taking a running start around the ring. He leaps in his usual position, and by the time he's like already up in the air. Well, this time he wasn't up in the air, and he accidentally knocked someone out of their wheelchair.
He smacks into the audience.
And of course, the guys see this, and they let go of the rope, and then the guy just tumbles the rest of the way. I'm trying to pick up this person that fell out of the wheelchair, and he's laughing. He's laughing so hard. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. So I pick him up, and I go, can I pick you up like this? Is this okay? And he goes, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. So I'm trying to put him in the wheelchair, but the wheelchair's brakes are not on. So the more I try to put him in the wheelchair, the further back it goes. And he's laughing. And I go, I am so sorry. I will get you all the cotton candy you need. And he goes, no, this is awesome. I've never had so much fun in my life. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to get fired. So we finally get him back in his chair. Everybody gets their composure back. We take a bow, and we run off, and we're in the dressing room. And the piñata is crying because he thinks he's going to get fired. And I can't stop laughing. And I go, man, you knocked him out. Kind of like in Friday, but I didn't use the profanity. But yeah, that's the horror story
that is one of my favorite things I keep out of my head.
I apologize. He was fine. He was great. He got a lot of cotton candy and everything else that we could find. We gave to this guy, but he understood that it was a total accident, that nobody was doing it maliciously. But yeah, that did happen.
Let's stick with that circus theme from episode 6. It's Becky Goodyear telling about her performer horror story.
A clown friend and I were up north doing pre-opening shows at a mall for the Carson Barnes Circus. And at the mall, we were having a costume competition for the kids to dress up as clowns. And we picked three winners, and they got to come to the circus for free in costume, go into the center ring, and be introduced by the ringmaster. Big deal, right?
Yeah.
So my friend and I, we judged, we picked the three, we were to take them out into the center ring. They all came in their cute little costumes, and we had to take them out there at a certain time during the show between acts. Well, nobody told the orchestra about this little addition. We got out to the center ring, the ringmaster announced their names, and the orchestra started playing the music for the elephants to come out.
Oh no.
And there were 20 elephants. The elephants did not come slowly walking. They were running in a big line. And then they broke into small groups so that they could enter each ring and go round and round. There we were standing in the middle of the center ring, and we were stuck. We didn't have anywhere to go. My friend and I looked at each other, because those elephants are really big when you're standing that close.
Oh, yeah. And you're standing there with
three little kids. Yeah. So we looked at each other. We grabbed the kids' hands, and we jumped up on top of the ring. So these elephants are walking past us. We could have reached out and touched them. They were that close. And we were just freaking out, but trying to stay calm for the children, you know, and only imagining what their parents were thinking.
Thinking, saying, oh, this is all part of the show.
Yeah. Well, as soon as the elephants had all gotten into their respective rings, there was a little gap, and we ran like heck to get out of there. We were shaking like crazy, and now we were looking at their parents' faces, who looked horrified. I decided on that day that the circus was not my calling.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty scary.
Here's a story directly from the Twilight Zone. It's Mark Beckwith and Obadiah Thomas. Lucky episode 13, Razzle Bam Boom!
Oh, man. Let's see. Well, there was a, we're driving out to Santa Barbara County, mm-hmm. doing a show there, and we're maybe running 10 minutes late, no big deal, and then flat tire. Pulls over to the side of the road. We get out of the car and we can't even find the tire because you get just bought this new car. We can't even, we don't even know where the spare tire is. Like, great. He's pulling out this thing. Okay. Mark, you call AAA. I'm going to call the school, tell them we're going to be late and this is possible. And then as we're dialing our phone, this truck pulls up in front of us. It's like, what is this? And this guy gets out and says, you guys need some help? I was like, yeah. And he's got this vest on and he's from like Santa Barbara County. And he's just this highway guy that goes around helping people on the highways. And I'm here to help you out.
Just for nothing. For nothing.
For nothing. And he knew where the tire was and he opened it up and he pulled out the tire and he changed it. And you got to admit, I got to tell you, changing a tire on a freeway is crazy dangerous. I mean,
yeah.
My, and this is this guy's job, and he does it. And we took a picture with him and sent us, he sent us off and was like, thank you so much. We got there, did the show on time. And then the weird thing is, as I called up the Santa Barbara Transportation Division that he said he was in, and I said, hey, guys, I got to thank you for Carlos, the guy that came out. And they said, we don't have a Carlos working for us. And then I looked at the picture I took. It was blank.
From my very first guest, episode one, Ken Frawley, a lesson to be learned the hard way.
I had a children's music group called Casey and Company. There were four of us, and we were playing at the Moreno Valley 4th of July Festival. It was supposed to end at noon. Mm. We were on the back of a flatbed truck in Moreno Valley, which is in the desert. It's 125, feels like 280 degrees in the sun in Moreno Valley in the summertime. So we're on the back of this truck, and they say, no, it's 12. Well, nobody was there. There was people way out in the fringes of this thing because the parade hadn't ended yet. So they wanted us to start. I had a couple characters. One was a spider and one was a dragon, and so we sent the fellow that was the dragon character out, and he walked around as we were singing, and he gathered up about 25 kids to come and sing songs. We're a children's music group. They have to have kids. We got to interact with the kids for it to work. It just doesn't work.
You need an audience.
How do you do a magic show without kids to do the magic with? So anyway, we're standing there and we're hot and we're sweaty, but finally we got some kids. And this man comes running up and he says, I've got an announcement to make. And I go, really? Yeah, can I make an announcement? Okay, and I handed him the microphone. This was at the beginning of my career when I was very naive about the world. He takes the microphone and says, hey kids, there's a watermelon eating contest on the other side of the park right now! 25 kids got up and ran across the park until they disappeared to go to the watermelon eating contest.
Perfect.
And I stood there going, that will never happen again. And multiple times people have asked for my microphone, and almost always it's to make an announcement about their event. Nope, I won't give you that. I got my audience here. I'm not giving this up.
This next story is terrifying, and it's something we've all been through. From episode 5, it's Lou Serrano.
When I first decided to become a magician, and I had approached that one restaurant, I told them that I would give them an hour of free entertainment, sort of as an audition, so they could see what I do, and that way they can decide whether or not they wanted to hire me. We set the date. Remember, I have never, ever performed in a restaurant, although I told them that I was a restaurant magician.
Of course. They say fake it till you make it, right?
Exactly. So I'm on my way to the restaurant, which was just at the time was about a couple of miles away from my house. And as I'm driving, I am scared. I'm so nervous and my heart is pounding through my chest. And the closer I get to the restaurant, the more scared and nervous I get. And at a certain point, I thought to myself, I can't do this. I have to turn back. I got to go home. I am not ready. And then I thought to myself, well, if I don't do it now, I am never going to do it. I will never become a professional magician, because every time I'm going to do this, I'm going to go through the same thing. I thought, you know what? I'm just going to show up there. And if everything goes to hell, well, then at least I can say I tried.
Sure.
And I showed up there. I did my my hour. During my hour there, the owner, he had come by and he took a look at what I was doing. At every single table, my hands were shaking. I was doing magic and my hands were shaking. I couldn't stop them from shaking. So he came to see what I was doing, and I'm thinking, oh man, he must have seen my hands shaking. There's no way that he's going to hire me. And so at the end of it all, I approached him and he says, "You're hired. When do you want to start?"
Oh!
And I thought, wow. And that restaurant I kept for 9 years. But if it hadn't been for me to have the courage to get past my fear, I probably would not be speaking to you right now, because I would have probably never become a professional magician.
This is a world record performer horror story, as told by the most downloaded juggler on the planet. It's from episode 14, Josh Horton.
We were on the Today Show to break a world record. So it's not like we're performing, but we were trying to do a world record on the Today Show. And we were pretty confident at the idea of the record and had practiced. And then it kind of got to the couple days before, and like we just weren't doing very good. This is most marshmallows caught in your mouth in a minute.
Okay.
And we had broken it several times, but we were getting a little nervous about doing it on TV. And when it came time for the real thing, we did not perform, and was pretty frustrated and sad. And, you know, such a cool opportunity that we did not capitalize on. And like a couple weeks later, we were like, all right, well, here's a juggling festival. I'm the special guest at the Kansas City Juggling Festival. I will redeem myself and we'll break it on stage there. Final act of the, you know, hour and a half juggling show. All right, Josh is going to come back out. He's going to try to break world record. All right, let's do it. We try like five times. Don't do it. That's the end of the show. Oh my gosh. And then that was also terrible. And then finally we ended up submitting our video alone in a gym. And so we have the official Guinness World Record, but it was not an easy path.
Imagine being told moments before you go on that you can't do your act. You have to do something else. From episode 17, it's Lily von Stupp.
I went to the South Post for Art and Ink to MC a burlesque show. Mm-hmm. And I do what you do, which is you look up and you say, okay, to the stage manager, so what are the house rules here? What can I say? What can't I say? And he goes, right. This is a PG show. And I go, wait, this is you hired a burlesque show. I go, women are going to be taking their clothes off on stage and their boobs will be showing. And he goes, yeah, but you can't use dirty words. And I'm like, excuse me? That is my entire act. Like, literally, I am a sailor on stage. What are you talking about? So I had to get the stage manager and the events manager together. And I'm like, okay, can I tell this joke? And they're like, oh no. And I'm like, can I tell this joke? And they're like, oh no. So here I am at a burlesque show and 90% of my material can't be used. Uh-oh. So I'm online 20 minutes before the show looking up jokes like, why is 6 afraid of 7? Because 7, 8, 9.
Ba-dum-bum.
Literally, it was, so in reality, it was a horror show. At the same time though, I made fun of the fact that I wasn't allowed to say anything dirty. So I danced around the fact that I couldn't say anything dirty the entire time. First act comes out, takes her clothes off, and as she throws her bra away, the woman in the front row grabs the two kids' eyes that are sitting next to her that are maybe 6 years old, covers their eyes, and starts dragging them out of the theater. And I'm like, are they hungry now? Are you taking them for a feeding? I'm like, you know, where are you going to go?
This last performer horror story, you have to hear to believe. From episode 20, it's Michael Troutman.
At one point, I was booked to do a show for a family series that was not very far from my home here in Maine, out in the country, a beautiful little theater space. It had been a former church, had been converted. So I was getting ready for that, and it was coming up in a few days. And I had an incident with my back. My back spasmed and went out, and I was just completely laid out with that. And so I could barely stand. I was taking, you know, muscle relaxers and all this stuff, but I didn't want to cancel the show at all. So I got a friend of mine, Leland Faulkner, who he's here in Maine. We've been actually friends since we started back in the 70s together out in Kansas City. So Lee said he would come and do the show with me and I would do what I could. So we're there and we're getting ready for the show and the audience comes in and I go out to start the show and I welcome everybody and it was explaining to them that I'm a little bit unsteady. I've had a back injury and so I've been taking lots of muscle relaxers and painkillers and there's many things I can't simply do in the show. So I've invited one of my oldest friends to be here in the show. Ladies and gentlemen, the magician Leland Faulkner is here today because of my bulging dick.
Because what? Because of what?
Disc.
Oh, and you said that?
Yes. And that, you know, that second and a half there between me saying that and you going, what? Was that dead space was much longer in the theater. Except for there was one young mother who I believe sort of yelped, and it was just dead silent. And it was just, I was as embarrassed as I could be to have, you know, and I knew why it was. It was because I'm all drugged up and feeling pretty good. And it was an embarrassment.
Those are some of my favorite horror stories from some of my favorite entertainers. If you have a horror story of your own, just go to the show notes page and put your story in the comments. I'd love to hear it. And I think a lot of the variety artists out there would love to hear it also. Or you can just email me your horror story at john@thevarietyartist.com. Have a happy Halloween.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.